Welcome to the Fair Parenting Podcast, where we cover people's stories, ideas, and the progress towards fair parenting.
Welcome to the podcast. Today is another in our replay series. I wanted to revisit this week the episode I did last year with Anna Maria Dedio. The reason is I've been reading her book, Love at the Border, and I found it really interesting. I wanted to recommend it and revisit the episode with you. It's a book that deals with her adoption of a child, and I found it really interesting, both on the subject of adoption and parenting in general, because her family consisted of two girls. And I think that is a very honest account of just the challenges of being a parent, but also the adoption process. And so I think it's of interest to people who may be adopting or who have friends who've adopted or just who are parents in general and want to hear an honest account of the challenges as Anna Maria presents them. And it's a really good book, I found. So here's the episode and here we go. Welcome to the podcast. Today, our guest is Anna Maria Dedio. Anna Maria lives in Philadelphia. She holds a BA in psychology from Villanova University and an MSW in family specialization from the University of Pennsylvania. For over 20 years, she has devoted time to nonprofit organizations, both globally and locally. She has served as president of Women International Leaders of Greater Philadelphia, which provides microfinance loans and empowerment grants to women in under-resourced countries. She is also on the board of Impact 100 Philly. Her parenting journey began with infertility struggles, which were isolating and sent her into a depression. After two miscarriages, she was blessed with a baby girl, but adding to her family proved impossible. That's how she found herself at an orphanage in Mexico to meet a six-year-old girl who she adopted. Inspired by that journey, she wrote a memoir called Love at the Border, an Adoption Adventure. Traditionally, orphanages are portrayed negatively. However, Anna Maria speaks warmly of her experience in Mexico and of the Ministerios de Amor shelters, which have changed the way Mexico cares for children. She has also written the Life Adventures series of children's books, featuring stories about adoption and foster care. The books cover topics such as trauma, attachment, identity, and grief. Anna Maria's mission is for parents and educators to use these stories as an effective tool to open up the discussion about adoption, foster care, and the love within blended families. Anna Maria, it's fantastic to have you here. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me.
Just quickly, from your bio, I just wanted to cover a few things, probably in my ignorance, I didn't understand. And that was what was MSW and also one of your charitable organizations, Impact 100 Philly.
Sure. MSW stands for Masters in Social Work. So it's a two-year program, and I studied at the University of Pennsylvania. And Impact is there in many cities in the U.S., and it's a collective form of giving. So women join together, and the dues are set at a certain level, and that money is pooled, and nonprofit groups in the local area are invited to apply for grant amounts. So the impact, the thought of impact, is that we want to raise the profile of perhaps lesser known nonprofits by giving high impact grants. So we have between 300 and 400 women that give, over $1,000 each. And that represents quite a nice set of grants at $100,000 each for an organization to use for, to get a program started, to continue with something that's very impactful for the Philadelphia region. And in fact, last night was our meeting where we announced our winner. So we've come to the conclusion of the year. We'll be starting all over again in September.
So you back one organization each year with the grants, is that right?
Five organizations each year in what we call a focus group. So one in education, one in health and wellness, one in family, one in environment, one in arts and culture. So those types of organizations apply declaring a particular area of focus, and grants are awarded to each one in those five areas.
That's really good. And is there a website for that we could perhaps put in the show notes that listeners can look
at? Yeah, Impact100Philly, P-H-I-L-L-Y, philly.org.
That sounds really worthwhile. I'm a member of Rosary myself, which is kind of similar. Mm-hmm. That we do
yes.
We give grants to local charities and occasionally international. But yeah, it's a really good, I really enjoy that. And it sounds, there's sort of some similarities there with the Impact group. Yeah, that's fantastic. So another thing I just wanted to, before we go into your actual story, which I really want to hear about, you mentioned in your bio that you're very interested in biographies. And through my own journey through the 4 years of family court trauma, one of the things that has helped to get me through that is reading biographies. So I was just interested as to what drew you to those, and if you've got any sort of favorites that you could recommend.
Oh my God.
That's probably put you on the spot there. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no. I've been reading them for years, and it's just, you're right. It's such an interesting, window into other lives, other decisions, and my interests range from, the famous to the unknown. And it's, oh my goodness, Katharine Graham, who founded the Washington Post and was at so many pivotal situations in U.S. history, and Mary Carr, famous chefs. There are too many to name, but I just always gravitate toward that. At one time, I was in a book group devoted just to that, and I you're right. I just enjoy reading them so much.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that I find with them is that you don't realize the adversity that I tend to read bios of people that biographies of people that I know, so they tend to be famous people, but until I read those books, I hadn't sort of appreciated, you only see the sort of the success side sometimes with many celebrities, and you don't actually realize the adversity that some of them have been through. I haven't read a biography, but for example, Tina Turner died a couple of weeks ago, and mm-hmm. she was obviously very famous for having come through a lot of adversity. And obviously, I think stories like hers help other people, and that's something I found through biographies, that seeing what other people have come through.
Agreed. Yeah. So inspirational.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because also when you go through adversity, you can feel like you're on your own, and exactly. Can become isolated. I know you referred to isolation a little bit with your parenting journey, and I think I think connecting, even if it's through a book or with somebody else's story, you don't know them, they don't know you, but seeing how they've come through this can give you some strength or perspective. Really powerful and worth doing, I think.
Yes, I totally agree.
Can we come on to your story? Firstly, I want to mention your website, which is amdidio.com. I had a look at that, and it also mentions your three books. It also has two things that I really loved, which was the coloring pages and the children's recipes. And I wanted, did you come up with those and adding more content like those?
Yes, my thought was with the website to try to paint the full picture of our family journey, so to speak. And a lot of, in my memoir, I refer to some incidents we had around food and just the act of cooking and sharing the kitchen with my daughters and with my family was a real way to, communicate with them and be together and just do something that was, less stressful than discussing issues or so. It's a good entry point for conversation. So I wanted to include those recipes that were important to our family and sort of a mishmash of cultures, my Mexican lasagna, so to speak, and that kind of thing. So yes, I love that. I love to cook, and I hope to incorporate more of that as I move forward with more stories.
I'm not such a cook myself, but I'd like to be, but I'm always born with that talent, and it is a talent. The coloring pages, you know, I thought were really imaginative. My child. I think it's one of the. I find your books really refreshing. I hadn't come across the themes that they talk about. It revolves around parental alienation, and I think many of the listeners similarly have cases of this. But what I found was in the content of your books and the themes, there seem to be some parallels there. You're talking about adoption. You know, another refreshing thing I found was that you're talking about adoption from the child's point of view, and some of the aspects such as loss and identity are similar to themes within parental alienation and unfold parent-child separation. Could you talk to us a little bit about how those themes that you mentioned, trauma and attachment, identity, and grief, how do they relate, for those of us who don't know, how do they relate to the adoption experience so that we can learn a little bit more?
Sure. Well, my fundamental premise and the base, the crux of the adoption theory, if you will, is that all adoption begins with the trauma of separation and loss. So no matter at what age, and there's my daughter has an interesting situation that I can talk about in a second, but the separation from the biological mother creates a trauma that's known as primal wound. I'm not sure if your listeners are familiar with that, but it's something that I came upon, later in our process, and just reading and understanding it revealed so much to me in terms of the struggles my daughter was experiencing. So trauma, can manifest itself at any point within a child's life. And when we started to see those behaviors, we were wondering, what is this all about? Why is she acting like this? What's happening? We love her so much. And that's, kind of beside the point, is that the love of a family really doesn't take away the pain of the family that she lost, or the, we adopted her at age 7. So that was a very unique situation. She lost another family in Mexico, the family of caregivers. So there were so many losses that I did not take into consideration. And again, you stated it so perfectly. My mission is to really bring these things to the forefront so that families can discuss them and understand them.
It's very profound to hear you talk about that, because, you described how the love of a family, has not stopped the trauma. And I guess it's different for each child. Some can experience extreme trauma or mild, but it's, I guess it's always there. I guess some families might think, well, we just have to love this child as much as possible, and I wonder I guess it's different in each country as well as to whether. Parents have access to education on these themes, or whether it's through books such as yourself, because I've not come across. I'm kind of really interested in that you're writing about this, because I mean I've got friends who've adopted and I've got friends who've been adopted, but I haven't heard about
books, talking about the things you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And the trauma can, as I said, manifest itself in different ways. For instance, in my second book, my second children's book, that's called How I Wonder Where You Are. As I said, a loving family doesn't take away that pain, doesn't take away that wondering. There in the story, her name is Carla, and she has a sister that's the biological daughter of the family. And when they're out shopping, when they're out at the supermarket or whatever, you know, other people will say to the biological daughter, "Oh, you look so much like your mother." But that's not the adopted child's experience. Mm-hmm. You know, who does she look like? Who does she sound like? How is she, you know, what are her biological roots? So the fact that she's wondering and asking questions about it is perfectly normal and appropriate. And that's kind of what I try to communicate in the book. It's not a statement against the family or a question of love. As you said, you know, the love is there and the love is so important and it's important to be supported. But an adoptive family should be accepting of this wondering and questions, and it's all perfectly normal.
Yes, yes. And so not addressing that is not the way to go about it.
Exactly.
I can see how some families would do that, thinking that it's for the best. But again, I think this educational side of your books is really good to sort of highlight perhaps the more constructive way to be. What advice would you give people who are thinking about adoption? Do your books cover that? Or are they mainly focused on the post-adoption scenario?
Well, correct. That mainly focuses on the post-adoption scenario, since they're picture books, and I wanted to kind of display the family in action. But my advice for those families thinking about adoption would be three strategies. First, do your research. I mentioned Primal Wound, and there are so many books out there. You know, 20 or so years ago when I was adopting, it seemed like all the books, you know, were similar, but then now there are a lot more types of books out there, stories, familiarizing yourself with Primal Wound and what trauma looks like through the years. So that's one. And then perhaps network with other families that have adopted. What situations, what was their situation? Every adoption is unique, but it's really helpful to talk these things through with families that have been through the process, whether domestic or international. I guess that's one decision that needs to be made up front. And then finally, sort of in the midst of the adoption process, really connect with professionals. Give an opportunity for the child to speak to someone else that's not a parent. And I think that creates space. It creates, you know, that therapist has credibility and can perhaps be another voice, a really helpful voice for a family that may need direction or support.
Yeah. Yeah. And are the themes and challenges and trauma, are they frequent with adopted children? And how successfully can they be addressed using the tools in your books? Is it something that as you said, every adoption is different. Can these tools regularly prevent trauma, or is it basically? I'm struggling a bit because I don't have the experience of all adoptions, but.
No, I think you're in the right ballpark here. You're trying to ask questions about mitigating this.
Yes.
But as I said, every adoption is unique, and trauma manifests itself in so many different ways. It you know, could be outright defiance. Yes. and sadness and just, but it could also be extreme compliance and, yes, oh, you know, my child is doing perfectly well. They're afraid. He or she is perhaps afraid to raise any issues.
Yes.
So that's, again, one of the mission, my mission is to encourage that conversation and create that openness. And if the child cannot discuss this with parents, then, you know, as I said, a therapist could be that person.
Yes.
If trust is established, and it's a long road, but it's something to consider.
Yes. Yes. I think where I was struggling with that question was because just cover it up trauma or is not the right way either, is it? You don't want to mm-hmm. to remove the symptoms of trauma. Sometimes, you know, you want to air it and address it and cope and resolve rather than it's not. And I think that's probably what I was struggling with in that trauma is sometimes a healthy part of the process to, you know, it's a reaction to something that needs to be resolved mm-hmm. rather than. And I think that's where I was perhaps not
languaging it properly.
Right. Right. No, that's exactly right. And so much learning can come from that. And when the complete family understands that, you know, blended families, again, come in all shapes and sizes. So when the family understands that, they can continue to move forward. But it really, it takes time and process.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as I just to revisit something else we were talking about a few minutes ago, you know, some people think it's, I mean, perhaps this is because I'm British, which is we tend to cover up, don't talk about it, you know. I get the impression that in America, people are more open, and I think we're actually a bit, well, I think it's a stereotype, but I think it is true, we are a bit.
Yes.
You know, my question it was that some people, perhaps in Britain, might think it's best not to broach these subjects with adoptees, and instead try and just treat them as if they were naturally born into a family, and just not speak about the past and the origins. And So my question was, what is the current thinking on that? What's your thinking? Mm-hmm. Because obviously some children, you know, every child's different, and some could be sensitive and actually not want to talk about it. But I guess in the end, at some point, most will.
Well, I have read accounts where the adoption, you know, was concealed from the child, and those situations were not positively received. Yeah. It's a form of betrayal. I mean, the current thinking on this topic, and you asked that, is that the concept of adoption should be freely and openly discussed within the family even before the adoption. The concept of adoption is really understood. So if the child, you know, hears this. And here's the story, the adoption story, because all kids, you know, my daughter came home from school one day just beside herself, and her friends were talking about the day they were born in the hospital and all that. And she was just so sad. And, you know, we did our best to tell her as much as we could. I mean, she was 7 when we adopted her, so she knew her adoption story. And we talk to her as much as possible. But children adopted as infants also need to know that as soon as possible. And that's really how I think, you know, greater acceptance and perhaps, you know, minimizing the trauma.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think I can understand why some families don't want to mm-hmm. address things. I think in life, people, or even in people's own lives, they sometimes don't address things from their childhood, and that's, you know, it's just the nature of some people. They rather bury things or just not confront them. And again, that might happen more in this country, but I think it's healthier to be open. I'm a big fan of the American investor, Ray Dalio, who talks about radical transparency. And I actually do think that in many, many ways, that is the best option. He talks about it in situations where it can be painful, but I actually think that secrecy it can be more painful in the long run. And it's not often done.
One additional thing I wanted to mention is that one of the reactions that I've had to my book is that, oh, well, this is about an international adoption. And this actually pertains to a British man that I spoke to not too long ago in a podcast. And he said, well, you know, most of the adoptions in the UK are domestic. Oh. And truth is, in the US, that is also the case. Domestic adoptions are outpacing international adoption. But the point I wanted to make is that these concepts with trauma, loss, separation, identity, and the grief of adoptees is present in any adoption.
Yes.
So it's not really a matter of, you know, there are additional challenges, of course, with an international adoption, in particular cultural assimilation and learning a language were some of the hurdles that we had. But the other aspects that we're discussing here today in terms of personal identity and the family that is unknown and where do I come from, who do I look like, and all that is present in adopted with adoptions and not just international or domestic or it takes place no matter what.
Yes. And you mentioned the Ministerios de Amor shelters in Mexico. Mm-hmm. How have they, because you say they've changed the way that Mexico cares for children, how have they done that? And also, do they make the adoption process better than it would be in the US, or are they fairly similar?
Well, it's interesting. The laws around international adoption are constantly changing, and I am not an attorney or an expert. In fact, obviously, Ministerios de Amor was a network of orphanages in Mexico, and now they no longer facilitate adoptions. So the adoptions in Mexico now currently all happen through the state.
Yeah.
So they are no longer in that process. But what they've done within Mexico is just welcome and take in children that are living on the street. Mm. And obviously for a while they were eligible for adoption, and now I guess it's you know, that's a decision that they made, and I really don't know much about that. But it's just this wonderful, caring, open environment where any child is welcome. Some children are there because their parents are unable to care for them. And parental visits do happen, but it's, Mexico is a country where their poverty is a problem. And, poverty is a problem everywhere. Yeah. But that is, you know, they've offered... Ministerios has offered, shelter and guidance and support for these families, and that takes place till they're of age, and they support their education, development, and the environment is just so loving and wonderful, and that's why I wanted to mention it, and I think our daughter, learned to love and learned to care for others there, and as I said, we adopted her at seven, so. It was, she spent a considerable time of her childhood there.
Yeah. Yeah. And you mentioned that some years ago. So I guess that she's grown up by now. Yes.
She's 27. Wow. She's 27.
That's really interesting because the last episode I recorded was with an author who written about his journey through the family courts. He lives in California.
Mm-hmm.
And his story was also 20 years old. He wrote a book and he actually didn't publish it for 20 years. He kind of wrote it in a cathartic process. And then he found that his friend was going through a similar experience. And at that stage, he said, well, actually, I need to publish this to help other people. But it's really interesting because he was able to talk more freely, and he'd recovered from his trauma. And it was just really interesting to see somebody come out the other side 20 years later. And he one of his messages was, you will get through this to people that are going through the family court.
Yes. So encouraging.
Yeah. He had become a great example for people who are struggling at the moment. And, you know, with yourself, you know, it's 20 years ago. So you're able to tell you, I don't know when did you publish your book? Is it recently or was it 20 years?
Yes. Oh, yeah. Yes. No, the children's books are recent. The memoir, it was a few years ago because I wanted to capture the whole process. But yeah. The children's books are rather recent because I'm writing this series and hope to reach out to different blended types of families.
Yeah. Yeah. So you've got the experience of actually having come through the whole of the childhood and more. If your daughter's 27, then you're talking about it from great experience. It's not a couple of years ago, and you still got a child that you're, you know, that's fairly new to the family or midway through their childhood. You actually raised your daughter and are talking from that massive experience all those years.
But one thing I mentioned in the book, in my note to parents, is that, you know, the child is changing and support changes through the years. We changed therapists a number of times, and, you know, a child just has different challenges and different feelings as they grow. And we try to, you know, match that support. And certainly she went to college, she studied abroad, and she, you know, at one point she, within 6 months of living with us, she no longer spoke Spanish. So she had some terrific losses and has really come through, and now works quite successfully in the nonprofit world.
Well, that's right. And I mean, with adoptees, it's again, I don't know the current thinking, and that again highlights my ignorance, because I've got a friend who adopted a child a few years ago. But are children encouraged to seek out their birth family? Or is that not... I know in England, they do keep records, and I think you're entitled to them. But I know that may not be the same elsewhere. In some cases, I guess it's not possible at all. But are children, do they tend to want to anyway, or
possibly? You know, I'll just say that it varies. That I wouldn't use the word encouraged, because I think the decision has to be that child's decision. But I think the support from the adoptive family has to be there one way or the other. So, it's. The question, you know, how I wonder, what are my roots? Where do I come from? And if the family supports that and the child wants to explore that, I think it's definitely a healthy direction. So there are many accounts now. I've read many, positive and negative stories of adopted children searching for their roots and finding answers, whether those are the answers that are expected or wanted. You know, really runs the gamut, but it's a little bit trickier, it seems to me, for internationally adopted children. I've read many successful stories of children returning to China, Korea, different countries, and finding those biological connections, and it's been very meaningful, and it's been a difficult experience. So again, it really runs the gamut, but I think the support from the adoptive families should be there for that child's decision one way or the other.
I mean, I had a I don't want to give out too much information on this particular story, but a few years ago it came to light that I had a family member that I didn't know about, and that then led, unfortunately, they died before, so I never got to meet them. But it led me to come into contact only by email, because the basically with relatives that I didn't know previously. Unfortunately, they were in Australia, so I and fairly elderly, so I didn't get to meet them. But I talked to them, you know, by email, and so. But it's not on the same scale, but it led me to sort of dig around a little bit. And at some stage, you kind of have to make the decision of how far you're going to take that. And and also at what stage you're actually going to be satisfied with your curiosity. And there is some part of, you know, there was some resolution for me in knowing about this relative and the other relatives that were still alive. And I've got pictures of them, and I found for me that my time in life and their time in, you know, that was probably as far as it could realistically go, because I can't go to Australia every week. And they were very elderly as well. But it was very interesting, and it brought sort of some closure to that side.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, that's really the key word that you mentioned. Sometimes there's questions lingering in the subconscious, or things that adopted children have been wondering about or thinking about for years, and just meeting the family, you know, is enough. The level of involvement, the level of interaction and communication is different for every family, but I have read that it does bring that sense of closure, which is so valuable.
Yeah, I think that's it. And you don't, I mean, obviously everybody's different, but I didn't need to go further than I had gone, but I found it very comforting. Mm-hmm. I've got pictures of that relative in my property, and I actually have a motorbike of theirs. They were a motorbike fan, and I don't ride motorbikes, but it's very, has great sentimental value for me. So just things, I mean, some people would say, well, you don't need a motorbike, you don't need pictures of somebody you've never met, but it's, I guess there's some parallels there, perhaps with adoptees on a very minor scale, but it just that sort of being in touch with of a past or a side of the family that I didn't know was very reassuring. Yeah.
Yes, I totally agree. In my first book, my first children's book,
yeah,
Many People to Love, it's a little bit more of the international story, in that the main character comes to the U.S., you know, to live after living a number of years in Colombia. So she has many, the trauma kind of manifests itself in many behaviors. And it perhaps it does wrap up a little bit neatly at the end, but again, the point of the books is to illustrate that it's not that love will not solve everything, and that parents do need to discuss the separation, the loss, the grief, the adjustment that needs to take place. So I hope that my books, you know, do that and open the conversation for families. The second book, The Triggering Event, is a family tree. I don't know if that's as typical a assignment in the UK as it is in the US. It seems like every time our daughters were being asked to put together a family tree, and for our adopted daughter, that was such a challenge. You know, we started to, she had just joined our family, and we were introducing her via, you know, sometimes computer, sometimes pictures, some visits, phone calls, and it was tough. So these are events that you know, we consider everyday events, but that can be triggering for children that are adopted. So again, the point of the book is to bring these things to the forefront so families are prepared.
Yeah, I found that really profound. I read, it was, I think it was in How I Wonder Where You Are, your book, that you talked about the adoptee in school being asked to draw the family tree, and that's something I would never have thought of myself. But it's a simple task, a common task, but it's something that is totally different for adoptees. And I just found it really refreshing that your book raised that. I hadn't heard of it before. And I think there's things that you're covering in these books that I haven't adopted yet. I've thought about it. But whether I do or not, I think that there's themes there that are similar to parental alienation, parental separation, but just of interest anyway, you know, to anyone involved with children. It's a perspective that I wasn't familiar with. I think what you're doing is really refreshing.
Thank you very much.
One thing I wanted to, so you've mentioned, you've obviously written several books, but the one that isn't a children's book is the memoir of you going to Mexico to adopt.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Order an adoption adventure. And one of the things I keep coming back to with this podcast is the importance of parents telling their stories, whether it's of the family court or whatever, because I think raising awareness is very powerful. And again, I'm a big fan. I keep talking about Ray Dalio in my podcast, of his idea of radical transparency and his book Principles, which a lot of people look at it from a business book, but he talks a lot about his family in that book as well, and the importance of transparency. And I think it's really a great, not every parent can feel able to talk and tell their story, but I think those that can help those that can't, or those that are not aware of the issues, you know. So I think it would, I mean, are you able to tell us a little bit about, you know, a lot of people say everyone's got a book in them. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, you know, but a lot of us may have the material and not the ability. Would you be able to talk a little bit about your writing process and how you actually approach the challenge of book writing? Because I think it's going to be daunting, as there's probably a lot of us listeners and myself that want to write a book, but you know, it's like a climb on a mountain. So how did you already have this in mind?
Right. Well, I've always enjoyed writing, but as we were going through the adoption process, there were so many unexpected surprises. Just, what was Mexico really like? I'd been there on vacation, but I'd never seen, you know, an orphanage, and just all of these interesting twists and turns. I thought, you know, I'm going to start writing about it. So I did that for many years before I thought, you know, I'm going to pull all this together and put it in a book, because as the girls kind of grew together and not so really together, they turned out to have completely different personality.
Yeah.
And it was very entertaining to me, actually. It's some of the book is funny stories that happened to our family, and how the two of them worked well together and did not work so well together. And so all of that just I captured in a spiral notebook. Mm. And just kept going back to it. And then one weekend I scribbled an outline together, and I thought, you know, this could definitely be a book. And that's how that, you know, process sort of started. And I had a friend who was a writer, and she would read the chapters and give me feedback. So it was very informal. And then it became, you know, more formal as I, you know, worked and edited and re-edited and looked at it so many times. But to me, it was a fun process, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. The children's books, the three, now there's a third one that's about to be launched, You know, as we speak in June sometime, the illustrations are just being completed, have just been completed. The events in those books all happen to our family in one way, shape, or form. So because they were so important to us as a family to enhance and help our communication and our support of this child, the support of our children, I wanted to condense those stories to a children's book to enable other families to learn from them as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about this new book? Because I haven't heard about that. What's it called?
So the new book is called Carla the Conqueror. Uh-huh. So there, you know, adoption is complicated. And again, perhaps this is a challenge for a child that this is a challenge. This book represents a challenge that is for a child that does not have English as their primary language. So Carla is asked to read a book, one of her favorite stories, to her class, and she is just overcome with anxiety and nerves. And she at one point has a number of tactics that she uses to avoid the assignment. And in the end seeks the support of a teacher and practices. And it's really kind of a lesson in kind of perseverance and resilience. And she conquers her fears and she reads the book to her classmates. Yes. This happened to our daughter that was, losing her Spanish and learning English. And so at the time it was traumatic for her. And that was one of the first things she said when she realized she was in the United States. She says, she said to us in Spanish, "I don't want to learn English." Mm-hmm. And so, of course, now she thinks very differently.
Yeah.
But it was a long process and a long struggle. I mean, part of the reason in writing these books is that, you know, I say very freely that I was not prepared for some of these traumatic events. Yeah. And my hope is that the books will help prepare parents. But I just thought our love and our support would solve everything. But she needed time. She needed support. She needed understanding. And eventually we did get there.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny, actually, because with the issues of identity, some people go through their whole life, even if they've not been adopted, they could still go through life wondering who they are and why they're like they are in relation to their family or their friends. And some people can feel mm-hmm. different for all sorts of reasons. Mm-hmm. So it's they're interesting questions that you raise in these books. And as I said, I think they're very relevant to people who are adopting or adoptees. But also people who aren't. I think they're interesting questions you raise. I think they're great. So you say this one's out in June, the new one.
Yes, in a few weeks, where the illustrations have been completed, and so there's a number of formatting things we're doing and finalizing the cover, and so it's very very exciting.
Yeah, and they're available. The ones that I've seen are available on Amazon in printed and Kindle versions. Is that correct?
Yes, and they are the children's books are also, and the memoir also available at Barnes & Noble through Ingram Spark.
Uh-huh. What we'll do is we'll put some links to those in the show notes so that people can find the books
great.
Easily.
Thank you.
And also to your website so people can see those recipes and the... the sketching pictures, which I think are great, because they're available to print out for people, aren't they? They can just print them direct from the website.
Yeah,
that's pretty great. And where can people find out more about you and your books? Is that mainly through your main website, or are you on social media?
Yes. Yes, on Facebook, Instagram, and I post periodically about family events and such. But the books and information about us at amdidio.com, amdidio.com.
Great. Okay, again, we'll put those in the show notes. Thanks very much for talking to us today. I'm really as I say, I'll keep repeating myself, but I find your work really refreshing, and I'm going to be delving into these issues just for my own knowledge, because I think the questions they raise are universal.
Thank you.
And the way that you're looking at it from the child's point of view as well is just brilliant. So thanks very much for coming.
Well, thank you so much. I really enjoyed the conversation. Thanks so much.
I really appreciate you coming on the podcast. Thanks. Take care.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this episode. Please join us next time.